Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, Chief TV Critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Sure.
I was in Chicago this week. They were getting ready for the Cubs to lose, but now I'm back. I was there with Trevor Noah because he was there. I was there with the Dodgers because they were there. There's somebody else there too. There's lots of people like doing their
I'm in Chicago.
But I was also there.
I'm done traveling. So did you have a good time in the Windy City?
Yeah, it's great. I would like to go back there. My wife has never been to Chicago, and I think this trip I was like, okay, we're going to do that. We're going to take a trip there because she should see it. It's fun. I've been there a few times now, so I've sort of seen a bunch of the stuff. You know, I've walked by the river and gone and seen the Bean and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I would love to go back again. It's very nice there. And, this time of year, it was warm, which is really, really good because I know then it gets really cold. And
it
unpleasant
could, yeah.
there later. So yeah, that
I've
was good.
I've never been there.
I have one more trip to go though. I'm going to go to Boston end of next week. Cool. So yeah,
ooh,
I know.
Boston might be colder.
Might
slightly,
be.
But it could be like beautiful fall colors.
Could be.
Fun over there.
Could be. We'll see. So my friend Serenity is getting married next weekend. So I got to go out there next week.
Nice.
But that'll be nice. I know a lot of people in Boston. Anyway, so I'm doing the traveling for you, is what I'm saying.
Okay,
I'll be in residence.
I'm gonna stay home. I'm just gonna be like in bed.
Do that.
Just resting.
I recommend that. That's
watching TV
that's
probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about television. This is a podcast about television. For those who don't know,
it is.
It's a podcast about television, and you have been writing up a storm. You've been writing so many of these reporters' notebook stories. Which are great. These are your analysis pieces for the Hollywood Reporter, where you really kind of break down industry issues, which is a lot of fun. And you brought back the Everything We Know We Learned From Television column too, which for people people who don't read the Chronicle back in the day, this is basically your hail of bullets. It's your bullet point, like, here are my observations. And this one's hilarious because you explain how you started to try to do that for THR and the editors were like, we don't understand what you're doing here. And you're like, forget it. Just forget it. But it's back.
It is back. Yes, they were like, you used that sentence last week. I was like, yeah, that's kind of the thing. It's like a thing.
It's like a recurring, it's like a format, like power rankings.
Yeah. They struggled with that too. I was like, do you have another name? I'm like, no, that is the name. That literally happens like as much as we can make it happen. Speaking of which, I'll be doing another one of those.
Yeah, you need to do that. You've got a lot of notebooks, not as many rankings. So people should, all the links to your stories are always in the show notes, which are at theincomparable.com/TVTM or in your podcast app of choice. But they should read this. There's a bunch of... bunch of items in here, obviously. So you threw a bunch of them out, and we've covered a lot of them here. So I'm not sure if there's anything I want to particularly pluck out. You did talk about your VIF stuff, which we already covered here. You successfully called the topic of your next reporter's notebook by talking about Amazon a little bit. But I always loved this column when I was just a San Francisco Chronicle reader. Before you even did a podcast. It's fun to have it back. I think you should do this. I think this is a great place for you to put your odds and ends that are not, going to withstand 1,000 words.
Exactly. And that's the idea. I think it'll be funny if I actually did this big, I kind of had the wink, wink intro where I got to say that this is what it used to be called and they didn't go for it. And then calling a notebook called Critics Notebook a notes column is like super too many uses of the word note, so I said that I'm just going to call it like things of note.
Yeah, 13
a
things of
amount
note
of things
right now.
And so maybe next week it'll be 20 things. Who knows?
Who knows? Or
but,
eight?
We'll see. We'll see if they let me do that, or if they're like, no, you did that last week. It was 13. It has to stay 13. Who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows? All right. Well, we'll see. But people should check that
editors,
out.
Man.
More. I know they're the worst. Oh, wait a second. That's sort of my job. So let's talk about Amazon. So Roy Price is out. at Amazon. Hollywood Reporter did some reporting about sexual harassment claims against him and other kind of allegations of a toxic work situation. He's out, and you wrote a piece about it. First off, the way that Amazon Studios is being portrayed as perhaps sort of like a garbage fire that needs to be put out. And second, about like who they should bring in to run this. But your point, your overarching point is, and it's in the headline, is like, this is not a reclamation project. Amazon Studios is not something that, I mean, to take it in baseball terms, we were just talking before we started about like Dusty Baker getting fired as the manager of the Nationals and John Farrell got fired as the manager of the Red Sox. These are successful playoff teams, but it's like, it's not quite good enough. But usually when you get a management job like that, it's a bad team and you have to kind of put it together. And this is not that. Like Amazon, it's like, it's not that.
No, it's not. I mean, this is a sweet job. I mean,
maybe Dusty Baker could look into this.
Maybe Dusty Baker. No, they definitely need a woman to go in there to like do a little smoke out the bad stench of the Price sexual harassment allegations and all of that that's unfolding in the toxic work environment. And they definitely have some issues there from a management standpoint. And you know, he was their whole team has run into definitely some trouble, and I point that out. But as far as like actually getting launching and getting stuff on the site and actually creating good shows, I was really sort of like at every and I pointed out that THR was doing this too. It's like, you know what? Like these stories talking about Roy Price going and the fact that he was given a mandate to change things because they weren't working. Great, that part is true. But the fact that like things were not working before the new mandate is not true. They did a number of really good shows. I mean, they actually jumped in with a decent fare in 2013, but like no one really noticed. But it was 2014 when they got things rolling, and they've been really good. They had a down year in 2016 for sure. You know, it's you can't say that it's a garbage fire. I mean, the last two, everybody quotes the last two shows, which were both F. Scott Fitzgerald dramas, and both of them bad. Z, the beginning of everything, and the last Tycoon. Yes, they were bad, but it's the narrative is that those are what led to, you know, other than the sexual harassment, those are indicative of what's on the slate. That's actually not true. They've done really good work, and so I thought, like, you know what, this is crazy. I mean, I loved their underrated 2017 offerings, which were Patriot and Sneaky Pete, and though, you know, a lot, what I was trying to put into context is a lot of these shows, all your other prestige places or Netflix or Hulu, they would love to have shows like these. So that's where you have to put them. Same thing with HBO and sometimes FX. They would love to have some of these shows, and that's the mark of, are they doing well? I think this dismissive nature that Amazon hasn't, just because they don't have a Game of Thrones hit, is done poorly. I was like, that's just a bad narrative.
I think it's, I mean, definitely Jeff Bezos that we heard, he wants a Game of Thrones hit, although to your point that you've made a few times since then, sure, who wouldn't want the next Game of Thrones? Like, literally everybody is trying to get the next Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I do think it's worth mentioning, like, somebody pointed out, the story around Good Girls Revolt is a good example, where, like, that was always, people were like, that was a woman focused, woman skewing show, and he seemed to have no time for it, no interest in it, didn't really care about it, said he never even watched it, and they got rid of it. And that is something that's come up, that between that and the fact that he went into business with Woody Allen, that's like the 1-2 punch of get a load of this guy. And you know, I don't know, that seems maybe a little bit fair that was the maybe those were little hints of his approach to these touchy issues that he's like, I don't even want to watch the woman led show, but sure I'll, right. I'll pay Woody Allen for whatever.
Well, it's also like, you know, I tried to break that down a little bit by saying that Good Girls Revolt was actually not a very good show. I thought it was really way, way too on the nose. It was like, it was too self-aware of its own self, and in a period piece, you can't be that way. And the writing was not quite there. I don't think that series worked at all. It created no buzz. But neither did I Love Dick, their recent comedy. I pointed out their failures. But the thing with Woody Allen, that was their mistake was paying him $80 million for 6 episodes. I mean, seriously? Those are the kind of issues that they should be held accountable for. But right. the actual going out to get Woody Allen, everybody wanted Woody Allen to make a TV series. So they can't be really faulted for that. I think when we start looking at Roy Price, and also, like, in fairness to, I mean, I don't even know, look, there's more than just one person there. There is a team of people in place that are putting things together. And, you know, in fairness to them, into Amazon, they were the ones who took Transparent on. And that show is, it was out there. It was, I don't think it was like controversial, but it was really different, and they nurtured that show. And I don't think anybody would say that Transparent is like a totally aggro male show, you know. And they also did One Mississippi with Tig Notaro, and right. got it into the second season. That show is a niche thing that I think HBO or FX would love that show, as I pointed out. So some of these things are a little harder to, they get a little bit distorted because of the, you know, sexual harassment stuff. And he's going to go down. I mean, he already went down for that. He's resigned. They were going to probably fire him anyway. And they have issues to work out. I just think that the bulk of the programming, you know, is pretty strong. And, you know, you can also, like, you can take a lens and, like, turn it to FX. You know, FX is, you look at that programming, for the most part over the years, that is distinctly male-driven programming. That's kind of what they were doing for a really long time. And so, you know, if something bad happened over there, there'd be easy examples. Like, oh, he didn't like women. That's just clearly not the case. But, yeah, Roy's thing is he's going to pay the price, and they got to probably do a lot more cleaning house over there than they need to, because the management stuff, $80 million was a boondoggle. They got in business with the Weinstein Company. Again, really bad time for that.
Yeah.
and they sunk $40 million of their own money into a $160 million David O. Russell project that was going to have De Niro in it and Julianne Moore. And then they had to, you know, because of Roy, they had to drop it. That's $40 million that they just threw into the wind. So they definitely need to fix things. But I'm just saying, like, in the legacy of starting in 2013, they've actually put some good shows on the map.
I've liked a lot of the Amazon shows, and I think you make a good point that it's so easy for people to look at this and say, well, look at all the other things that are wrong with his tenure there. But I think there is some cynicism that's maybe fair, that if he was viewed as having the Midas touch and having the perfect lineup, that it would be like, well, he's going to go to rehab, and we're going to suspend him for a while and things like that, instead of just firing him. That just the cynicism of, like, you know, one of the reasons people don't survive even terrible things that they do is that they also, you know, are replaceable. And if somebody's viewed as irreplaceable, then they're allowed to get away with a whole lot more. I think that is a sad fact, but you know, you're making the point here that the Amazon's position is actually pretty good. They have a bunch of good stuff. They've made some mistakes, and whoever takes that job is going to have a good foundation to build on.
Yeah, and I think they probably have a candidate inside, but they probably have there's a number. I mean, the problem is you have a lot of other female executives who could run that show that are currently tied in contracts. You might have to wait for them to get out, but, like, man, they're all over the place.
You made the point that they hired Sharon Tally Iguato, who was brought in for event series development, which is, like, interesting, because that's like find the next Game of Thrones.
Right, exactly.
But that's, so they've already got a fairly high powered person who is looking for programming for them, and so, you know, between people who are on the existing team and then, you know, maybe finding somebody on the outside too. But yeah, I agree with you, it's a great job. I don't know what their budget is, and of course you have to deal with the billionaire owner who has his own opinions, right? And who knows how that goes. I've certainly heard rumors that people at various parts of Amazon will work on something, and then Jeff Bezos will just be like, no, we're not going to do that, or I want to do it a different way. And then you're like, all right, you're the billionaire, we're going to do what you say. So
exactly.
But still, you know, they're in a pretty good position, and they've got a good budget, and they've got some good content already, so it's not a bad job to take.
Yeah, I think that you get the right person in there, and they've got a good they've got a good slate. And as I pointed out, they have some really interesting stuff that's coming up. I had been in, like, deep background talks with people who were saying, like, hey, like, don't sleep on Amazon's development slate that no one knows about yet, because there's good stuff coming. And as I pointed out, the one that a lot of people are talking about are Tong Wars, which is Paul Attanasio's series about Chinese immigration and gang wars, and it's directed by Wong Kar-wai. So it's like that's pretty big, and they have other good stuff in the mix as well.
Cool. All right. Let's move on and talk about your other notebook piece, which is about, is the TV industry afraid of YouTube Red and Facebook Watch? Is that like an Apple Watch? I put it on my wrist and then it shows me Facebook?
That's, you know what? As we talked last week, Apple's running out of ways that they can, what they can call it, their show.
Yeah. So the Apple TV and Facebook Watch are both, could have both be services. So basically there's a story in the Hollywood Reporter that was by Natalie Jarvie, which is a good story about YouTube Red and Facebook Watch. And, you know, what you're basically saying in this piece is, they're not something worth worrying about yet. These both seem to be like not super, they're trying stuff out, but they're not all the way in the game yet.
Yeah, and it's like it's she wrote a great story, and there's a couple of really great sidebars there. But when you look at it, you're like, and you hear their executives saying, "Well, they're going to take over the world, and they have all these eyeballs and all that stuff." If you put a little more critical lens on it, it's like, "Oh, that's adorable," you know. And you know, because it's like they don't really know how to make TV yet, I think the frustrating thing is so funny because I saw that when I tweeted this out yesterday. Some of the stuff was like, "Oh, I bet you thought that 5 years ago with, you know, Netflix and Amazon." And I was like, "Nope, different. You're not, clearly you didn't read the story." Cause there's like, that's the thing. It's so easy to say, "Oh, if there's money and there's technology, then they will eventually change the face of, you know, whatever medium you want to apply to this, in this case, television." And for the longest time, there's been huge fears that within the industry, I hear it every time I'm in LA, every time I'm at a party, every time I'm talking to somebody who's making something for a network, they're like, "Oh yeah, Facebook and YouTube are going to totally change things." Well, this story comes out, it's super well researched, but what people forget is that we don't know yet. And the industry doesn't know yet if these platforms are really dedicated to going all in on television. That's the first stumbling block. The second one is all these agents and managers, they do not want to put their big name actors, writers, and directors on YouTube. Just don't want to do it. That YouTube is totally tainted because it's a user-generated thing and everybody thinks it's amateur hour. And they have a huge hurdle to overcome there. People completely forget that. I mean, you can say, "I'm going to call it YouTube Red," and you can say, "I'm going to call it YouTube TV," and you subscribe to it, and we'll build all the stuff. And they have the money to do it because it's Google money. But you got to get people there, and it's not going to happen overnight. And by the way, it has not happened with anybody of note. You know what I mean? There's some discussions, and I point out that Kerry Washington wants to produce something. Yeah, lots of people want that Apple, I mean that Facebook and that Google money, but they don't want to be in front of the camera there until it's a proven thing. It could go, and I try to hedge my bets about that because you can't bet against these gigantic tech companies because they have the money to make it happen and people will take money. We know that. But there are so many other options and there's so much other money, and that's the thing. I tried to not even say much about Apple in this, but like that's kind of the hammer. It's like money is not the thing anymore, and you talked about this too. It's like there's so many places you can go to get money. It's not like Netflix is poor or Amazon's poor or who is slightly poor, but you don't, it, relatively speaking, but they're only a domestic, and $2.5 billion is a lot of money. And then Apple money. There's money in the market to go places that are completely established. Why would you go to like what is essentially you're popping up on somebody's Facebook page or you are going on a YouTube channel, which I'm telling you, it has its own taint. So it's just, it could happen. I'm not crazy that I would say it'll never happen, but this is not the threat to be worrying about right now.
The power of YouTube. Okay. Yeah. As you and I have kids who are mm-hmm. of similar ages, and I hear a lot about, "Oh, well, YouTube is the future and YouTube is, everything's going to be YouTube." And forgive me, cause I may have ranted about this before to you, but it's like, yes, YouTube is huge. I can see where YouTube has replaced traditional media, but in my kids, if I map it to my childhood, what it's replaced is the stuff you watch when you're a relatively young kid and you're watching, back in the day, we watch reruns. they're watching YouTube. That I totally get it. But my daughter has, and I know you've talked about this with your kids too, like my daughter is all the way, she does some YouTube, but she's all the way in on Netflix, on Scripted. She's into Riverdale now too. Like she has flipped over. She is not going to be a 20th century TV watcher, but she's also like, the YouTube is for certain kinds of stuff, like, you know, makeup videos or game play along videos, stuff like that, let's play videos. But she is like totally in on Scripted TV on Netflix, and for Riverdale anyway, she's on CW now too. So YouTube's brand, like, yes, it's powerful. Yes, there's a lot of people watching video. Yes, there's a whole generation who's grown up watching YouTube. I'm not sure that that translates to investing in Scripted, if that makes any sense. I'm not sure that brand, it does what you think it does. I don't know.
Exactly. And the time spent there, look, my son's totally all over YouTube, and what he wants to watch is videos that people find there and share on other social media platforms.
Sure.
You know, they take it from YouTube, they share it on their Snapchat or whatever it is, and or Instagram, whatever, but mostly Snapchat. Or he just watches videos on YouTube. But the videos he's interested in are basically best described as unscripted. It's somebody crashes in their skateboard, or like there's a huge dunk at a playground in Brooklyn that people are crazy about. This kid who's five, whatever, dunks a ball. Those are like, that's user-generated video that he's watching in really small increments. And he's watching a lot of it, but in little increments. If you were to say, let's make a half-hour video out of that guy's story about how he grew to be able to dunk that, nope, not interested. So I don't think that – I think that what you're speaking of is really true. The crossover is not as direct as people think it might be.
Yeah, yeah. So – and Facebook, forget about it. Like – I have no doubt that if one of these companies spent several $1 billion in acquiring Scripted, they could build something. But I don't like Facebook. Again, they have a platform that's popular for a bunch of stuff, but I have a hard time seeing it for this. That would be, you know, you just can't flip it on and off. At least with Apple, even though Apple doesn't have a whole lot, Apple has a history of media products that are kind of in the vicinity, especially with music. But you know, you could see them building a streaming service, but grafting more originals onto YouTube Red that are traditional content instead of sort of like blown up YouTube shows. I don't know. And then Facebook, that's where people live stream. I mean, not to put too fine on a point, that's where murders are live streamed on Facebook. Okay.
Right.
So yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the, what people say, and some of it you can't put in this column because it was already brushing up against 2,000 words as it was. It's like, okay, so technically, if you read Natalie's story, the outfit that's ponying up the least amount of money in a budget, which is still nebulously titled around television, but there's not. It was like, yeah, we could spend this much, is Facebook. Facebook is by far the lowest operator financially. And it goes back to, and you know this, like Apple has always had the money. They just haven't, whereas for the longest time, not interested in actually creating TV content. That was not their thing. And it took them a while to get around to do it. And or even like make a TV set. I think that was a thing they wanted to do. But, you know, it's like if Facebook has never really wanted to do that until recently. They've been fine making money. Spending money to create a different product that might make you money, that is a whole other gambit. And they're only recently getting into it now. And my column was basically saying, yeah, they're dipping their toe into it, so don't worry about it right now. You can worry about it in like 5 years, but don't worry about it now.
Yeah. Worry about it later, not now. We should talk about two reviews you did. Now, the first segment I like to call Remind Everybody That Tim Hates Broadcast Television. especially broadcast dramas.
Yeah,
and this is what dramas. This does. What some of our former listeners would say is this is the reminder that Tim thinks that if you watch broadcast dramas, you have terrible taste, which is not what he's saying. But you had to review SWAT, and that pretty much went as we expected.
Yes, and like almost even worse so, because I'm fine with having like something that is going to be sort of brainlessly action oriented and take me out of my game. We've talked on this podcast about a number of dramas that were that were fine. They were action oriented, or they were, you know, they were procedurals that worked. Whether it was like Cops or if it was, you know, Sherlock detectives, that kind of thing. There's fine dramas out there, but and I love to go to the movies and just give me something that's semi smart, that's action oriented. I could watch Atomic Blonde a billion times over. I could just do that. And so you think that SWAT would fit the bill, like just like entertain me. But why do you have to be so stupid when you do it? I mean, like so many cliches. I mean, it was like eye rolling cliches. And I was just like, oh, I can't do this. You know, I can't, you know, there's all these platitudes and all this like really kind of shallow storytelling. Like, okay, you people, you don't understand that there's a divide out there in the black community against the blue cops. And like, we're going to try to blend black. Everybody knows these stories. Like you could read the paper and you realize that cops are shooting black kids all over the place. Like, that's a big story. So for television to sort of say, we're going to kind of do like a little half-assed version of explaining this heated topic, it's kind of insulting. And, you know, and then the rest of it's just stuff blowing up. But I just don't have time, you know, like I just don't have time and to watch a show like that. Even one where you think you can like fold your laundry while you're watching it. It's just so insulting. I just like, nope.
There are better shows to fold your laundry by.
Yes. That should be our separate podcast. It's TV shows you can fold your laundry by.
You can fold your laundry by. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, here's our sponsor. It's a maker of laundry. And we don't have a sponsor this week. Wouldn't that be great? That would have been the perfect transition for like a Mack Weldon spot or something.
Yeah,
just like,
nice.
Here's the laundry you want to be folding while watching a good show. We could pick a show, but alas, no sponsors. So now we move on to, this is the part of the reviews summary where we talk about a show you liked on a network nobody has heard of and probably doesn't have unless they have like DirecTV or something, which is Loudermilk on the Audience Network.
Yes. And you know, it's funny because the Audience Network did Mr. Mercedes before this. So they're right on quite a bit of a roll. But as we were dividing up stories, I took Loudermilk. Like he's a former music critic, so I'm and a writer. I'm totally interested in that. And he's a curmudgeon. But Dan got stuck with another not very good audience thing. So when our reviews kind of ran side by side, he was like, yeah, there's no reason to find out if you actually get this channel. And mine was like, hey, here's kind of a really smart half hour that you should see if you actually have it on your channel, even though you're gonna have to go looking for it. But yeah, Ron Livingston stars in this series. If you don't have Audience Network on the AT, you know, if you don't have DirecTV, basically, you're not gonna find this. I guess it's available on AT&T on demand, so maybe you can find it that way. It's really hard to figure that one out, but you just need DirecTV, which is now owned by AT&T. That's why they call it that. And we've already gone over this. It is the dumbest and most clunky AT&T's Audience Network. Can you just not do that? Really, can you not do that? Can you just call it the Audience Network or something even more clever? And then people would maybe say, oh, I want to find that. But, you know, anyway, it's a really surprising half hour. It's written by Bobby Mort, who was written for the Colbert Report for a long time. He's done some other stuff too. He's really clever. And it's, you know, outside of the pilot kind of being a little slightly over the top for an already over the top show, it really evens out. I loved the four episodes that I watched. So if you have AT&T/DirecTV, then you should check this out. Peter Farrelly directed it, so the Farrelly brothers. And I loved it. It's kind of winning, you know. And Will Sasso is really great in it. It's like a grumpy guy leading a 12-step program and for recovering addicts, and he's just a misanthrope. And but he's a former rock music writer, so there's all kinds of references to music, which is fun. It's supposed to be taking place in Seattle, but it's clearly Vancouver. And
of course,
but it's fun. It's really good. It's like way better than I thought it was going to be. And so for me, that means like I want to watch this, and I want to watch Mr. Mercedes. I don't want to watch the one that Dan had to review. But they're doing pretty well over there.
Yeah, this is for people who don't know. This is what used to be the 101, I want to say, which was the channel it was on DirecTV. It's DirecTV's like Originals, Originals channel. You may first have heard of it, in fact, because this is how Friday Night Lights got a last couple of seasons. Is it was a deal between DirecTV and NBC, and so they ran on that channel and then on NBC later. So it's that, which I used to have DirecTV, but I don't anymore. So now I can't see these things.
Yeah, but I still have it, so I still want to see it.
I had AT&T on my phone. I wonder if I can just watch it on my phone if they'll let me do that.
You know, maybe you could.
It's
who knows?
Possible.
I was actually trying to figure out what other options there were, and they don't really make that very easy. AT&T U-verse, I guess you have that.
Yeah, so if you've got that for your TV, you get it too, because that's an AT&T thing too.
Yeah.
But it's just, and it'll probably change over time, right? Because it was originally just a vehicle for DirecTV to do originals, and now who knows, maybe AT&T will try to get it to go in other places and cover other stuff. I don't know.
Right. And just briefly circling back to this whole idea about having money, I can tell you one thing. AT&T, they got money. So
well, that's
it's just
for sure.
Like, that's another thing that like people say, oh, well, everybody's going to run to the money on YouTube. I'm like, nah, I wouldn't be so sure. There's the money is not the problem. So it matters what kind of platform you're on.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we should look up or somebody can write in with like, where all can people watch the Audience Network? Maybe, I don't know.
Yes.
Maybe if I could use my AT&T, you know, phone username and password to watch the shows, that would be pretty funny, but I doubt it.
That would be good.
They want more money. All right, should we do some letters?
Let's do that.
All right, a half an hour in seems like a good time. First, I want to just say hi to our friend Indy Sarah.
Hi, Indy Sarah.
She is, and this is sort of like dual purpose. She has discovered the special Slack community that we have for Incomparable members.
Oh,
and
did she?
she's in there hanging out, and it is really great to chat with Sarah and all the other members too. But she just joined recently. We're talking about some music in there. It was pretty cool. So basically, if you'd like to hang out with other people who listen to podcasts like this one, there is a TVTM channel in there, and lots of other channels about stuff. And support the TV Talk Machine. This isn't part of our pledge drive, but I'll just mention it because I think people aren't aware. You can go to theincomparable.com/members, sign up for a membership plan. They're at some different levels, $5, $10, or $20 a month, and you can also buy it yearly, and you get access to a bunch of bonus podcast stuff, and we do a bonus podcast episode. I had an idea for a bonus member bonus, by the way, that you and I should do, which is we ought to do a little bonus podcast where we talk about holiday music based on that big playlist that you curate. So maybe we could do something like that when it gets closer to the holidays. Anyway, and you get to be in the cool Slack community. So theincomparable.com/members, and you can say hi to Sarah, who is in there, and it's been really fun talking to her because most of my interaction with her has been like tweets. So now it's chats.
And I can tell it's Indy Sarah right now directly through this podcast, like talking into the microphone, coming out in through the ether and into her ear
simultaneously worldwide.
She would like Loudermilk because there's music references galore in there. There's very funny ones. There's a Saul Zanth joke about Creedence Clearwater Revival, which was good. There's a very funny Jethro Tull reference, and there's some good stuff about grunge rock and all this kind of stuff. It's good. It's fun. Yeah.
She and I were trying to define what power pop is and how you would define it to somebody who's never heard of power pop before. We're working on it. I built a playlist. It was a whole thing. Also, I'm going to give a shout out here to the listener who listened within an hour to our podcast last week and then sent me an angry email about how The Orville is great, Star Trek Discovery is stupid, and I should watch more episodes of The Orville until I'm convinced that it's a good show. To which I say, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I haven't deleted them from my DVR. I didn't enjoy the first two. Maybe I'll watch more at some point, but... I will tell you again, Star Trek Discovery, feeling really good about it. The Orville, still feeling the way I was before. But hey, you do you. Just because I don't like something doesn't mean that you have to dislike it. You could like it too. That's fine.
It's a big world.
But if I have to choose, if somebody asked me directly, like they did last week, should I watch The Orville? I'm going to say no. Maybe I'll revisit it sometime. Lots of TV out there.
Mm-hmm. So
angry
much.
Nerds, it happens. My Vogon Poetry, MVP. MVP of the 716, tweeted in to say, can anybody beat the run of TV shows that Michael Schur has been involved in? He seems to avoid slumps. Yeah, right? I mean,
I would say that's, the good place.
You got started on The Office, Parks and Recreation, The Good Place, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's an executive producer on Master of None.
Yeah.
He wrote my favorite sports blog of all time, which is Fire Joe Morgan. He's on one of my favorite podcasts, which is the Pozcast with Mike Schur and Joe Posnanski, where they draft things. I have liked pretty much everything that Michael Schur has done. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure if you went with like Jim Burrows or somebody who's directed like the pilot of every great sitcom of the last 30 years or something, maybe. But in terms of writing and executive producing, it's a pretty good run by Mike Schur. I'm looking forward. That's who I want Apple to throw some money at. Just throw money at Mike Schur. Let him create something for Apple. Do it.
Speaking of that, by the way, Apple picked up another executive today. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
this is just breaking.
Morgan Wandell, who was at Amazon, he was one of the heads there, and there was shifting around, and so he was doing a lot of dramas while Joe Louis was doing comedies, and then there was some shifting and moving. It's funny. This is sort of, you know, this is why people listen to the podcast. So we'll tell them this. Sort of talking out of school one time. This was the discussion that I was part of at TCA when Amazon was there and their executive panels were there. Somebody from another network came after them and said, "So I guess Wandell is the sane one." So there you go.
So he slotted in as basically the head of international development, which is also kind of interesting because the way they've done it is the title that Matt Chernus has. We talk a lot about Zach Van Amberg and Jamie Ehrlicht, who were hired as to run the whole thing. But they hired, and you mentioned this a few months ago, Matt Chernus from WGN America as chief creative head of U.S. programming. And now they've got Morgan Wandell from Amazon, who's come in as head of international and creative development, worldwide video. So, you know, I don't know how much of that is like truly structural versus wanting to give everybody a very impressive title and putting them in the mix. But they've got, you know, now we've got Sony, Amazon and WGN America executives building this video team at Apple.
I know. It's pretty amazing.
That was good. That was a good Columbo breaking news story there.
Thank you.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. I should probably put that link in the show notes too, because I care about our listeners.
You do.
But that's, Apple spending money. I feel like every week is going to have a story about Apple spending money on something at this point.
Well, it is kind of funny that so far they've been actually hired. They've been actually like creating more executives than they've been creating shows.
You gotta have the people. Here's the thing, Tim, is that if you get the $1 billion checkbook, like you can't just have one person writing the checks. You can't write them fast enough. So they need like four executives to develop the shows fast enough to write the checks to spend that cash.
It's totally true.
Dean, our traveling listener from the 707, said this is similar to the Mike Schur question, which is, has any other actor been in more solid shows than Ted Danson? Cheers, Bored to Death, Curb Your Enthusiasm, The Good Place. What, no Becker? Anyway, Ted Danson,
Becker.
I will tell you, Ted Danson in The Good Place season 2, and we've got another question about that coming up in a minute. I think he's doing some amazing work in The Good Place season 2, where he's being asked to do, it's like in season 2 of The Good Place, he has suddenly gone from being the number 2 to Kristen Bell to basically being the star of the show in a lot of ways, because the script kind of leans on him a little more heavily than it does Kristen Bell, and he's killing it. It really is something to see. It's amazing. Speaking of The Good Place, these are all flowing together. Mark in the 360 wrote in to say, I was wondering if you could explain what happened with The Good Place. Last season, the show was incredibly good, but this season it is incredibly terrible. I gave up after 4 episodes. My friends agree that it's terrible, yet the reviews I read said the show is better than ever. What is your take on it?
Wow.
I think Mark may be in the bad place.
I think Mark is in the bad. Yeah, I have not heard people saying it was terrible lately. Everybody's raving about it.
Everybody I know is loving it, and I'm loving it too, I got to say. So, Mark, I don't know.
I guess that's a thing, though. Huh?
I don't know. We'll see. I will say this. A lot of times, the real summary judgments for a season happen when the season is done. So I suspect we will hear sort of like when The Good Place finishes up, we'll everybody will render their judgments, and then we'll see whether the prevailing conclusions were positive or negative. But I've been loving it. I got to say, I just watched the latest one last night, and I thought it was great. I think it's more varied in a lot of ways. They're able to tell a bunch of different stories this season because of the changes they made to the premise at the end of last season. And so you end up kind of going in these various directions, and more Ted Danson, I think, is actually a good thing. And I'm really liking it. I never know what to expect on that show, which is fun.
Yeah, and that's I have not caught up. I've seen like the first one, but I've not caught up the rest of them. And but I definitely had the finger on the pulse of other people saying that they love it right now. Like people are out of their minds about it. Mm-hmm. So, but look, you know, reasonable people
again,
can disagree.
That's right. Mm-hmm. James wrote in on the Facebook page. Look at that. I looked at Facebook this week, everybody.
Nice. And, good job, Jason.
And James said, I don't understand the CBS All Access pricing. I'm paying for the cheaper version with commercials, but why do I have to pay for it at all? I understand the subscription model if I don't have commercials, but if it does have commercials, I also don't want to pay for it. In fact, with an increasing amount of pay subscription services, I'd love a free service with commercials. Now, I wrote James back and I pointed out that most media actually are a mixture of you pay for it and you see commercials, like magazines and newspapers and cable television, where you're actually paying for those channels and they have ads. And it's very rare that you have a super premium something where you pay for it and there are no ads. And right. That's the number one model. And CBS wants to get your money, and they'll either get your money and subsidize it. If you think of it this way, if CBS All Access really costs $10 a month or $9 a month, they're willing to give you a break on what you pay in exchange for making money, making up the rest of that money with ads. Or you can just pay and get it ad-free. Hulu does that too. It's not great. I know people hate ads, but now that we're in a world where you can actually just pay a little more and not see the ads... But, you know, this is not a new thing. Like, you pay for things and they still have ads in them. That is actually pretty common.
Yeah, I know. But I get what he's saying.
It would be great.
I totally, yeah.
It would be great to have a streaming service that is entirely commercially subsidized. But I don't think the economics work that way. If they did, we'd probably have one, right? Like, Hulu sort of was trying to do that and they stopped. Like they stopped, they want you to pay them now. Even with the ads, they want you to pay them. So I don't know. I think that's just the fact of the economics of it. But yes, I totally hear him. It would be great.
Yeah, because I feel it too. Because you're saying I'm paying you X amount of money. I don't want the ads. Otherwise, just give me your TV show.
Well, I'm at the point now where I'm not going to do that. Like literally, I will either not subscribe to your service or I will pay you whatever it costs to not have ads. But I'm not willing to go in between. But that's a luxury I have. Is like I'm either going to pay or I'm not. But you know, for some people,
nice.
if you want more access to things, I've heard from a lot of people who said they're going to get the Star Trek Discovery, you know, trial period when the first batch of episodes finishes, and they're going to binge it, and they'll pay $6 or whatever, and they'll watch it with commercials, and then that'll be cheaper. So great.
Yeah.
Okay, here
you lead the way.
Here is one from, who is this from? I've lost who this is from. This is terrible. I have totally failed. It's Rui. It's listener Rui who writes in to say, I hope that's right. I've been watching The Inhumans. I don't know why, but I have. Anyway, the Inhumans have this amazing technology that allows them to communicate remotely across great distances and instantly, which is especially funny when someone on Earth, Hawaii to be more specific, manages to commute with someone in the Inhuman city, which is on the moon. Somehow this civilization that lives enclosed in a hidden city on the moon decided to create a way to communicate instantly, remotely across space, and often across a whole planet when Hawaii isn't facing the moon, with no mention of satellites or any relay method. They just do. Even in a Marvel series, this is not a thing. All right.
Oh, that's good.
Instantaneous.
I'm glad we got to that letter.
You could accept the telepathic dog, giant telepathic bulldog, but not the instant phone calls to the moon. Okay.
It's just, that's not plausible.
Got to draw a line somewhere. I get it.
That's your opt-out moment right there, folks.
Okay. Formerly atoning Alex. He says, I feel like I've atoned sufficiently now. I'm open to a new nickname in the 908. Says, with all the recent Rick and Morty fan-related headlines, I've been wondering about bad fans. Some of my favorite shows, Rick and Morty, Breaking Bad, Mad Men, The Sopranos, It's Always Sunny, build their series around terrible, immoral characters doing sexy or exciting things which give them power initially. The arc of these series are all to artistically explore the corrosive flaws under the surface of their cool veneer and either ironically comment on or deconstruct those characters critically. However, a non-insignificant portion of these shows' fan bases overlooks that point and glorifies these central characters. Given the current state of the world, do creators have more of a responsibility to either ensure their series aren't glorifying the choices that they're trying to also critique? No more cool cook montages on Breaking Bad, for instance, or simply avoid deconstructing problematic characters through art altogether now that it has become clear a certain segment of the audience will always learn the wrong lessons from those shows, or is simply calling out the bad fans in the ways Vince Gilligan and Dan Harmon have done it, is that enough? Alex in the 908. That's a good question. Like, anti-heroes and the danger of having people take the wrong message out of a story about an anti-hero?
Well, I'll go this far. I think that the anti-hero thing's played. It's been done a lot. I'm open to see other programming because there was such a glut of that, especially as all the cable channels were coming of age. But no, you can't leave a person's reaction to the creator. It's like it's been around forever, right? People say, "Oh, if you have this book and no one can figure out that these are metaphors or that the you know, they might like this awful character that they shouldn't like." Well, that's been around forever. You can't like do an 8-point turn around someone's ignorance. That's just my feeling. And there's too much of this, the anti-hero. There's definitely too much of that. I'll agree with that because I'm just open to, you know, it's why I like The Tick so much, because, oh, it's not a gritty cable drama, but I wouldn't change anything on Breaking Bad or Sopranos or any of that stuff. If people are learning the wrong lessons, that's their fault. So I don't cripple my art. Don't make it dumber because someone else might misinterpret it. So I want it to be complicated and nuanced and challenging, and I want to think about it. and I want to talk about the issues that it brings up. Rather than, because television existed in a black and white world forever. It's like the heroes wore the white hats and the bad guys wore the black hats. And like, there's enough of that on SWAT right now. You can watch that show. Leave the really complicated shows alone. I don't want them changed.
I am reminded of the people who have been complaining about Star Trek Discovery as being, why is Star Trek so political and they're dealing with all these like political issues and political correctness? I like my old Star Trek. And it's like, do you see the old Star Trek? That's all it's ever been about. And yet I have those moments where people talk about Star Trek or Doctor Who, which are these shows that have very clear views of how we're supposed to treat other people and all this stuff. And then you find these fans who are completely... they seem to have missed the point of the show. Mm-hmm. And there's some point where you have to be like, yeah, you didn't get what the show was about. And it's not my, you know, that's your, you failed. And that's on you. I can see like extreme examples of something that is seen, you know, as taken, like Fight Club is a good example, right? Where Fight Club has a lot of fans who have missed the message of Fight Club, but you know, should Fight Club not exist because some people are going to take it wrong? I don't think either of us would be comfortable in saying that. Like, that's, you got to let art be art. And if it's rejected or, you know, but I think, you know, it's worth creators being aware of how people might misinterpret their art, because, you know, I think ideally they would like to not be misunderstood. They would like it to be taken as they want to take it. And so being aware helps you make sure that your art is taken the way that you mean it. But if knuckleheads are going to take it the wrong way, I don't know what you're supposed to do. If you're Dan Harmon and you got people rioting in McDonald's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's your fault.
Right. Yeah. But there's precedence to creators taking, knowing what they're doing and sort of fixing it. For example, very famously, David Chase, who created The Sopranos, was alarmed and annoyed that Tony Soprano, the, you know, I mean, that's the draw, right? It's I talked about this like just last night with my visual studies class. It's like the anti-hero is an interesting figure because it's someone doing bad things that you should be against and you should dislike that, but then you end up liking them because they have other good qualities, which is sort of the duality of the human condition taken to a little bit more of extreme when you're killing people as a mobster. And so, but he's got other things that make him likable. And that's what's really interesting about the gray area. You know, if you're uncomfortable in there, that's one thing. But so when the third season was about to start, David Chase was at Prestor, and he basically took the first few minutes of his session. And this is a long time ago, obviously, because, you know, this came out in 1999. So this would have been 2009, 2000. It's probably 2001 when it happened. And he said, look, too many people like Tony Soprano. He's like, he's not supposed to be. He goes, you can like some of his qualities, but he's not the hero. He is the anti-hero. And so he upped that season. He made sure that Tony Soprano was doing things you really could not ignore anymore. And that involved throwing women around and killing more people and punching women and all. It was just, he was like, you shouldn't be able to draw the distinction that you're supposed to, that he's the good guy here. And so he was annoyed. So that was a creator who created this person and said, okay, you're missing the point here.
Right. So. And so he recalibrated and leaned into making him unlikable because he discovered, I mean, he meant for him to be unlikable and found out people still liked him. So he's like, okay, well, let's try harder full credit to him. Right. I mean, that's probably, he wants his art to be taken the way he wants it to land. Right. And he was finding out it wasn't landing quite as he intended. So he changed it. Good for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and Vince Gilligan, who creates Breaking Bad, is one of the greatest guys and the nicest guys in the whole industry. And he was just like, his take too was like, I can't help you if you can't see this. He's like, you know, when he said, I took Mr. Chips and turned him into Scarface. He was like, this, the level of what he did has never been accomplished or even attempted in television. He took a very likable milquetoast character who you felt sympathetic for in the very first episode of the very first season. And by the end, he was the incarnation of evil run amok. And you were not supposed to have any feelings for him by the end. And he took him from, you know, blending into the wallpaper into the black hat. And it couldn't have been more stark. And he's like, nope, you're really not supposed to like him at the end.
Well, one last letter and then we'll go. And this is a good one. It's from John in the 925. Who writes in, last week in Jason's positive review of the new Star Trek, you made a comment that cuts to the heart of how I do my own personal power rankings. Jason said he gets sad when the episode is over. In the platinum age of television, there are plenty of great shows, but for me, not many that'll make me lonesome when they go. For example, I was perfectly okay with Breaking Bad and The Sopranos ending, both top 10 all-time series for sure, but there weren't any characters I'm dying to see again, no stories left untold. On the other hand, the series finales of The Wire, Mad Men, and Veronica Mars let me feeling bereft. Most recently, I've become attached to the gorgeous ladies of wrestling. Can't wait to get back in the ring for season 2. If you had to spend eternity in a television show, this took a turn, where would you want to live, John in the 925?
Wow. I don't know. I need more time to think about that, because you could look into the future and say you want to be in space, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's
and like have some cool job there.
Yeah, some Star Trek kind of job or something like that. Or although I'd be afraid in a lot of those shows that I would be killed by a robot or something, right? Which you're not.
You could live in Springfield.
Well, that's interesting. That was interesting. I was thinking of The Good Place too. That would be
sure.
You'd be literally spending eternity there. I don't know. I'm going to say I would probably live in some sort of throwback era thing, maybe like Red Oaks, where I was just like, it's always summer at the country club in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. So it's more about the vibe the show gives off.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. Like, yeah, or in terms of, it's an interesting turn because I get what he's saying about like leaving them wanting more. Like, I want more of Freaks and Geeks, but that's not going to happen. You know, I don't know if I would want to live there, but I'm as he says, it made me lonesome when they went. He was making a song reference too. That was a music. You're going to make me lonesome when you go. That's a
yeah.
So anyway.
Well, There's few characters that I love on television more than Don Draper, but I'm not sure I'd want to kind of go through that whole thing with him again.
No, that's like he's sitting on the rocks in Big Sur and pan over and you're sitting there too.
Yeah, because I usually am. Yeah, it's perfect.
But I think that's the magic of when TV really resonates to you. And I love his differentiating between a show that you feel like, all right, good job show. You told your story. And a show where you're like, oh, but I want more. I want to know more about these people, and that's those are two different feelings. And both are valid, right? Like one leaving and wanting more is one thing. I also really love a show. We were talking about this when we talked about streaming and like doing the wrap up episode of Sense8, right? It's like giving a show a landing so you can say, look, here is this entire thing that you can watch, and you can feel sort of satisfied at the end that it came to an end. It's a different kind of feeling.
Well, as far as that goes, whenever I watched Northern Exposure, I always wanted to live there, and I was like, oh, that's folksy and woodsy and quirky and fun. And then I'm sure that's the, you know, it's like people who want to live in the Cheers bar. I mean, I totally understand that.
Right.
It's like everybody knows your name and you go in there, everybody's funny and you're having drinks and you're having a good time. It's and same probably true for a different generation who wanted to be on the couch on Friends and hanging out at the cafe.
Sure.
So like part of it's just about like a bonding experience of something that gives you warmth. I don't know. I think I'd have to, maybe it would have to be Mad Men for me. I need a lot of modern furniture. And so I don't know, maybe if Mad Men was set like in the wine world, it would be perfect.
Interesting. Contact us, whoever is running Amazon next.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so here's how you can all get your letters read on the TV Talk Machine. You can go to email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. That is the most direct way. You can send us a tweet at TVTM. I'm Jay Snell on Twitter. Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. But TVTM is the one that I check before we go on. And yeah, you can go to your Facebook page. And if you're lucky, I'll see it. That's facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. If I remember to check Facebook, then... We love you, Facebook. I just don't remember. I'm not on Facebook all the time, so I have to go there and check.
I hear you.
And we'll be back maybe next week if we can schedule it, and if not, the week after, because like I said, I'm not going to be around next week. But if not, then the week after we'll be back. Until then, have a good weekend, Tim.
All right, you too. Safe travels.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.